In Hallenfels Brothers Incorporated versus City of Corpus Christi, the court has allotted 15 minutes for each side to present arguments, and the court is ready to hear argument from petitioners.
May it please the court, Mr. Lehrman will present the argument for petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Good morning, Your Honors. This is a case where the court has granted writ on whether or not there's a duty imposed upon a municipality in approving a statutorily imposed payment of performance bond, determining whether or not that bond is in fact a valid bond. Briefly, the facts of this case go back to 1983, when a contractor by the name of LeMann Constructors entered into a general contract as a general contractor for the City of Corpus Christi. At that time, Article 5160 required that before a municipality signs a contract with a general, they must require the general to post a sufficient payment and performance bond, which by statute required that bond be approved by a surety authorized to do business in the state of Texas. Relying on that bond obligation, all subcontractors, because of the McGregor Act, who are precluded and prohibited by law in a public job from filing any type of a mechanics lien, went ahead and entered into a contract with LeMann because they relied upon the city approving the payment of performance bonds that were posted by LeMann. At the time the bonds were submitted to the city...
Mr. Lambert, did they really rely on the city or did they rely on the bond? They didn't expect that the contract would go under.
I think they relied on the bonds, Your Honor, and I think they relied on the evidence and the findings show that they relied on the city to make sure that the city fulfilled their responsibility of approving the bond.
And they did.
Well, in this case, what we're arguing is that the approval of this bond was the approval of a completely fraudulent bond done in a negligent manner. From the face of the bond, it's pretty clear that red flags just stuck out. If anybody took the time, and as the Court of Appeals found, there was only a cursory review done by the city attorney's office. They merely called one notary public to find out if such a company existed. And on their own documents, their own in-house approved list of insurance companies, had they taken the time to look at the power of attorney that's and on the bond, which is a part of the record, it's a completely different insurance company. And this insurance company that they approved is not even on their own list of approved insurance companies.
Are you claiming that the city was therefore negligent?
Yes, Your Honor.
And under what provision of the Tort Claims Act has the city waived its immunity?
The city has waived their right on the fact that this is a proprietary function. At the time this case was tried and went to trial, the statute had not enumerated the specific governmental acts that are now listed in 101 of the code. What we're saying is that this is a proprietary function because it's a ministerial act that was done for the advantage of the public, not a required act that the sovereign requires.
It was not the Tort Claims Act. I apologize for the question.
Not.
But hasn't the Acme case held to the contrary as far as municipalities' liability
that's correct, Your Honor. The Acme case, though, we believe that decision, though, is misplaced in the sense that I think we have to talk about two different things here. We have the actual approval of the form from looking at the face of the bond, and we have the approval of the bond itself. And in this case, what the city is arguing, as I understand in their response, is that all we have to do is look at the form. This is a form which the city supplies to the contractor. It's their own form. Had they looked at their own form, they would have seen that there are several discrepancies. And we're saying that the city shouldn't be able to profit by its own negligence in taking advantage of a subcontractor, especially in this case, because the equities in this case, I think, are more so in that, in this case, the city has never paid anybody for this work. The evidence showed that when the general contractor went bankrupt, the city had retained $20,000 of the contract price because they felt there were some problems with what my client did. When the general went bankrupt, they held that money in escrow, and to this day have never paid anybody.
Counsel,
was that escrow or retainage that the law requires them to retain?
They took out a 10% retainage of $3,250, and they took out an additional $20,000 when there were some alleged problems that occurred with the work.
Now, is this profit that they've kept, or has this money been paid out?
No, according to the record, that they have paid out some of it, and they still had about, I want to say, $6,000 or $7,000 left after everybody was paid. They used the money that was supposed to go to us to pay other subcontractors when they had to hire a new general contractor.
What kind of City has no contractual obligation. Is that correct?
With Heldenfeld Bros, that's correct.
So
we could not sue them directly, and that's why I think the court's held against us on quantum merit and on because there was a contractual obligation with LeMann, and the city was arguing that you can't sue us directly. And we argued also unjust enrichment because of the fact that they retained this money and they didn't pay anybody. And the difference in Acme and here is in Acme they did pay the subcontractor before the general went under, and the court said it's not going to be fair that the city would have to pay twice. And we came along, they didn't do that. And so that's why we feel that the equities in this case, not only have they not paid anybody, they've kept this money.
But if they do pay you the full amount you're claiming, then the city will pay twice, at least in part, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. That's correct.
Counsel,
not us, but other subjects.
On page 2 of the CA opinion, it says, on October the 5th, 1983, the city authorized a payment from a man's TV to $29,500, not including $3,250 for retainage. Did they authorize payment but not actually make payment?
They authorized the payment. They were going to make the payment. Then some problems came up with the work that Heldenfeld did, the concrete T-beam. So the next payment came along and said, wait a minute, we're going to take it back. So we're going to take back $20,000 that we were going to pay. They never actually paid it.
So LeMann went bankrupt before the issue over the defective T-beams was resolved in Heldenfeld's favor?
Right, and that's where we came in saying we looked to the city for payment because they looked to us to make the repairs and to look into the problem. And that's what happened. What happened was, if you look at the payment bond, a performance bond, the city has an approved list of insurance companies that they check. At least they testified they checked at trial. The insurance company by the name of Royal Indemnity Company is listed on their own, but it's listed as a Delaware corporation with a home office in New York. On the face of both the payment and performance bonds, both of them show Royal Indemnity as a New Jersey corporation, which we believe should have shown a red flag that there's a difference in different states of where it's organized. It also, on the attached power of attorney, it's a completely different corporation, Royal Indemnity Corporation. It nowhere does it state that it's authorized to do business in the state of Texas, which is required by 5160. Nowhere does it say that it's nowhere does it tell its home office, and it shows New Mexico as where it was notarized. I think a simple reading, had they taken the time to look at this, number one, they would have seen that Royal Indemnity Corporation is not even on their own list of approved insurance companies. They could have called the Commissioner of Insurance. They could have called different insurance companies. It's a simple ministerial act that all they had to do is take the time, we believe, to make some phone calls.
Do you as a subcontractor, is there any law that would hold that you have a duty to inspect the bond?
No. Our duty is to rely on the bond as far as the case law and as far as the statute is that we as a subcontractor have no rights other than going against that bond. And before our contract is entered into with the general, the city has already entered into because the bond says on the bottom, the date of the payment bond must not be prior to the date of the contract. So when the bids are open at that point in time, we really don't have a contract with them. And this bond is already before the city approved, before they will accept the bid from the general. Later on, unfortunately, it was found out that this bond was completely fraudulent. 2 years after the city approved it, for the first time, they took the time to call up somebody and find out whether or not this was fraudulent. Now, granted, the FBI knocked on their door and asked them if they knew the individuals that were involved in the company. And I'm not saying, and we're not taking a position that the city intentionally approved this bond, but we feel like they were negligent. They had a duty that was a reasonable duty that was imposed on them by law to approve it. They cannot come up here and say that they fulfilled that duty insofar as Royal Indemnity Corporation, because the only thing they did was look in their approved list and call up a notary public. And their approved list would have, at that point, would have told them that they had not, that this company had not been authorized to do business in the state of Texas. Second of all, the form that was approved, that the city approved, on one has a attached power of attorney from Royal Indemnity Corporation. The second one doesn't even have an attached one. And the city has never been able to explain why they accepted one bond that had an attached surety from another corporation and one that they had no attached power of attorney whatsoever on there. The bonds, at the time they were accepted, were relied upon. The city did no checking. They never inquired. I think the next issue that the city is attempting to argue is that governmental immunity prohibits. I'd like to address that this is, according to the city, a governmental function as opposed to a proprietary function. We take the position that it's a proprietary function because it's a ministerial act that was performed for the benefit of the public, and it was not a required act. This duty could be delegated. It was not required only to be, the act of calling up somebody and verifying the form of a bond, in a sense, under the Round Rock case, at most would be a quasi-governmental act. The one case that was cited, one of the cases that was cited by the city, which I'd like to address, where they talked about the approval of a plat. In that case, I think it's similar in logic in that the actual approval of a plat form, or actually whether or not the plat itself complies with city ordinance, that would be a governmental function. But the form of the plat, whether or not the form of the plat complies, that would be a ministerial function that can be delegated by the city to third parties. The next argument that I'd like to address that the city raises is the argument that they did fulfill their duty, and that is they approved the form of the bond versus not having to go into the substance of the bond. And I think that's not supported by the logic of the argument, because from the form of the face of the bond, clearly if they had done what they said they did, they would have had some red flags put up. The city attorney that testified, and I think we cited his testimony in the record, felt he didn't really have to do anything other than make a check on the list, and that's basically it. Unfortunately, what I think happened here is that because of course of conduct over time, the city, over the years, has done exactly what they did here. These bonds are put before them. They assume from the face of it that they look okay, and that's all they did. And I think a subcontractor deserves more of a duty on the part of the city before a city will, especially in a case where, unfortunately in this case, where the general went bankrupt. Of course, nobody knew that at the time.
Given the recent amendments to the law, how would this case be decided if the facts were coming up today? The city would clearly be immune.
I think the city would clearly have a legal duty that was imposed upon them. Article 5160
under
now.
5160
now has been amended, which shows the legislative intent that there is now liability imposed. And I think the Court of Appeals mentioned that in its opinion, in a footnote, that I think if this case came up today, that there would be no question that there was a legal duty imposed on the city to make sure that bond was valid.
But as it is, all we really have in Texas is the Acton case, which holds against you, but has language that's more favorable.
Yeah, I'd like to think that Judge Nye's passionate plea to change the law and to argue the equitable attractiveness of this holding, I think really is distinct as far as our position. It's fair, especially in this case. It just doesn't seem right that they haven't paid anybody. This has been going on since 1983. The general came back and did the work. And we feel like we take the position that it's from an equitable basis and from a legal standpoint that the court should reverse the Court of Appeals opinion and render judgment in favor of the trial court's opinion. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. The court is ready to hear argument from respondent.
May it please the court, Ms. Bray will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court. This is basically the third case that has been tried arising out of the same fact situation, the one instance where the city was defrauded. And I want to emphasize to the court that I don't want bad cases to make bad law. I think that the legislative changes that were made by the legislature providing liability were probably more in response to the several cases where the city has absolutely failed to even request a payment or performance bond. Specifically the Greenville case, the Ingleside case, and the Prairie Valley cases, where the subcontractors were left to go under other theories because they had no bond. In this case, the city did require a bond. The city of Corpus Christi always requires bonds, and it requires a bond.
What's the difference substantively between requiring no bond at all and not assuming the responsibility or performing the other side argues the duty to assure that you have a valid bond?
Your Honor, I think the difference is that if you require a bond, you have got the bond. You haven't completely waived. We're not even going to worry about it. The state says we're required to ask for a bond.
But a fraudulent bond is no bond.
I think it is very difficult to protect yourself from fraud. I think that the statute specifically says that the duty in this case is upon the contractor to provide the bond. It is 5160 specifically states that the contractor has the obligation to provide the bond. 5160 has a very specific redress against the contractor and against the surety. 5160 never addresses going against the city. It never tells the city that it's their obligation to ensure or verify that the company behind the bonds are indeed a valid company.
Is the tenor of the statute to dictate the city that it cannot let a contract in the absence of a bond? It has liability imposed on it if it doesn't have a bond?
The courts have not held that way.
They didn't bother to determine whether they had a bond or a piece of paper that's not worth shredding. And it seems like they have an approved list of insurers, surety. And the surety listed on this phony bond doesn't exist. Isn't there some obligation somewhere along the line? I mean, contractor is not going to get the bid if he doesn't put up a bond. So he puts up a piece of paper and says, this is my bond. They don't determine that it's a valid bond. Whose obligation is it?
Your Honor, I believe that under the, historically, it has not been the obligation of the city. The Greenville case said the city, that if the city doesn't get a bond, they're okay. They're in the clear. I don't particularly agree with that. But that's what that case says. I think that the city should. But the courts have held that if they don't, there's no liability. The statute itself says that the city's obligation is simply to approve it as to form. I think that language is very important in interpreting the meaning of the statute and what the obligation of the city is. I think in this case the facts also are important because the city didn't get what was just a piece of junk paper. It got a form. It was fairly appropriately filled out. The front of the paper had the name of the corporation, Royal Indemnity Company, with CO, period. The attorney checked the list. That was a valid company in the state of Texas. He did check his list. He also called the notary to verify the signatures. He stated...
Now, wait a minute. Was it a valid company or it just had the same name as a valid company?
Apparently what Mr. Gray had done, Mr. Gray was the guy that was using the name of a valid company and making fraudulent payments.
But it was incorporated in, I mean, there were significant details that were different.
Well, there never was the fraudulent bond. There never was another Royal Indemnity Company. There was a Mr. Gray who was using the name of real companies and writing fake bonds, for which he is now in the federal penitentiary, not just from the city of Corpus, but from some other cities. And the name on the company, on the face of the bond, was the name of a valid company listed by the State Board of Insurance and licensed to do business in the state.
But there were details on the bond that, from a very close reading, would have shown that it was not the same company.
That is the argument. I think in hindsight, it's easy to look back. That Mr. Coffin did testify that what he did procedurally was his usual and customary procedure. This was the way he's always checked the bonds. There was not any testimony that what he did and the steps he took were indeed negligent.
Under the new statute, with the city, is the city an insurer of the bonding company?
Certainly not.
Well, what additional liability is imposed on the city under 5160 as amended in 1989?
In terms of the new amendment?
Yes.
In terms of the new amendment, the way I read the statute is that if the city does not get a bond, if no bond is provided, as happened in the Greenville, the Prairie Valley, the Ingleside cases, those are very clear that the city is liable. I think under this fact situation where the city got a bond, but there was some problem with the bond.
Did they get a bond or did they get a piece of paper that said that there was a bond?
Well, we got what we thought was a bond.
Well, was it a bond?
I think the problem, it was not a valid bond. It appeared to be a bond. The problem that our city faces right now is how far do you go in verifying these bonds?
Is it asking too much to go far enough to see what state the company was incorporated in? Or to see?
That was something that was overlooked.
Is it asking too much to call the State Board of Insurance or get their list that they publish every year?
The testimony was that the city did have the list and that list was checked.
Was it checked to show the state of incorporation?
It was checked for the name. That was as far as the testimony went, that they did check the name, and it was believed after examination of that list and the bond that company was a valid company licensed by the state.
Okay, what's the name of this company that's involved?
Royal Indemnity Company.
Royal Indemnity Company. Is there more than one Royal Indemnity Company that is licensed to do business in the state of Texas?
No, you're not.
Did you inquire as to whether there was one?
The assumption at the time apparently was that this company, this bond was from that company.
And that comes down to what counsel says is whether that assumption that you indulged in was negligent.
Yes, Your Honor. Your Honor, I think it's important for the court to note that the trial court never went into the facts as to whether or not Mr. Coffin was negligent in his approval of the bond. What the trial court basically stated, the trial court found no findings of fact. They did conclude that under 5160 that the city had a duty to approve and ensure, those were their words, that these bonds were valid. And the appellate court never addressed that issue and simply said that one, they did believe the city had a duty, but they did not believe the city was liable under the issue of governmental immunity. Never addressed the additional question, and never addressed whether Mr. Coffin's acts were indeed negligent or whether they were in conformity with existing standards.
Why, under the City of Round Rock case, isn't this at least a mixed governmental and proprietary?
Your Honor, I think that this case is a perfect analysis, perfectly in point with the Round Rock case. In the Round Rock case, the court said that you know it's governmental, one, because you're required to do it by state law, and two, because there are some acts within your approval that are discretionary. Bob Coffin was required by state law to approve these bonds, which he did. It did take some discretion on his part. He had to look at it. He had to examine the bonds. He had to make some decisions. In hindsight, we see that he made the wrong decision. But the Round Rock case and the approval of the subdivision plat, I think it's important to note that the court didn't look at what the engineers did in approval of that plat. They didn't go back in and say, well, did the engineers know that the dirt was going to cause flooding? Did the engineers look at the floodplain? How did they do it? They didn't examine how the work was done. They didn't examine whether it was negligent. They didn't look at that under these facts, this is a governmental function, and you are not liable for fulfilling your governmental function.
Has the city still retained the $6,000?
Let me address that. There was one payment where we did pay for the tubing, and then the next payment went out. They said we've got a problem with the tubing. There was cracking in the tubing and leaks when it rained, so they withheld $20,000. Contractor walked off the job. We had expenses of repair. We had to hire a subcontractor, then a new contractor, to come in and complete the job. And at the end of all those repairs, there was approximately $17,000 left. The city then estimated the final payment that would be owed to LeMann, which we didn't make because we don't pay the contractors unless they pay all the subcontractors, and we had $150,000 worth of subcontractors who had not been paid. And after we evaluated the final amount that would have been paid to LeMann, including the liquidated damages, there was approximately $2,000 left owing to LeMann. And the city still has the $2,000. I want to address one other issue, which I think is important in this case. I don't think this case is appropriate for a tort analysis. I have briefed in my brief duty. I have briefed in my brief liability. I don't think we have a duty under 5160. 5160 specifically says as to form. 5160 specifically says who you can go after. A proper legislative reading of the plain language, I believe, would show that we don't have a duty. Mr. Lehrman actually argument that this proprietary supports that theory, because if anybody can do it, then his client could just as well have done it. Helen Phillips has got $1 million worth of contracts with the state. If somebody else could have done it, if it's not a governmental function, they can do it as well as the city, and the city shouldn't have that duty. In terms of negligence, Heldenfeld also had another opportunity not to get an investigation, which was that it submitted invoices to LeMann twice, was unpaid, and then proceeded to deliver a completed product to LeMann. And if you look at this in a strict negligence interpretation, maybe I should have cross-claimed that they were negligent and even provided the beams when they knew that LeMann was not paying their subcontractors' invoices. I don't think this case is appropriate for a negligent sort of analysis, and I would cite to the court the recent case of Southwestern Bell versus Delaney. While this is not a contract case, the whole issues arise out of the contract for dealings between the city and LeMann. And in the Southwestern Bell case, Southwestern Bell failed to comply with their contract, and this court found that there was no tort liability. In this case, the city failed to catch LeMann for fraud. They failed to catch, we don't know whether the fraud was LeMann or the bonding company. Looking back, we assume it's the bonding company. LeMann may have been a participant in that. But in this case, the city simply failed to do what it should have done under the contract, arguably get the bond, make sure that the bonds were provided. That's a contractual type of obligation. I don't think it's particularly appropriate for a negligence analysis. I would ask the court to affirm the opinion of the Court of Appeals.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Your Honor, I'd like to give my time back to the court. I don't have any additional rebuttal. I think that's covered in the main part.
Well, let me ask about the old Article 5160. What is asked of? What do the words as to form mean?
In my opinion, and I think in the reading of the holding in ACME, the argument that was made by Judge Nye, form is, if you present this document to somebody, and this is a form which the statute requires the city gives to the contractor. It's their own form, so obviously they're familiar with the form. It's not like they're for the first time looking at a new form that may have been submitted, or they get 10 different forms. Looking to the form, when you supply the form, to me means how it's filled out. Not the pre-printed portions, like making sure that the same pre-printed portions are on the same form that you gave to the general to get filled out, but how does he fill it in? And by looking at that form, has he shown, according to the statute, that this insurance company is authorized to do business in the state of Texas? Because without looking at the form, there's no way you can know that unless you have a name of an insurance company first to check. The general tells them it's a state of New Jersey corporation. You have to look at your list or check with somebody to verify that it is in fact a New Jersey corporation and, as the statute requires, authorized to do business in the state of Texas. And merely looking at this form where it says, and duly authorized to do business in the state of Texas, without taking the time to see whether that's correct, to me indicates logically that all they did is look at this, it's their form, they type in the words authorized to do business in Texas. It's not like the general did that. So their form is already telling you that this should be an authorized business, and how do you check? You check by looking if they're approved, or you check by calling the Commissioner of Insurance. And that would be the logic that I would use as far as what is approving the form.
And that the name of the insurance company is listed in with the insurance?
No, it's not. One of them is as a Delaware corporation. A Royal Indemnity Co. or company is listed as a approved insurance company, but it's listed as a Delaware corporation.
Well, what difference does it make if it's, what state is incorporated in?
I think it puts up a red flag. Are we talking about a valid? But the second one is not.
All right.
Question. Royal Indemnity Corporation.
With regards to putting up red flags, are the facts as Ms. Bray represented that your client submitted invoices to the contractor at least twice, did not get paid, and you continued to provide the services?
That's not correct. We continued to provide the services because they went bankrupt, and the city, because the general went bankrupt, asked us out of professional courtesy or as part of our obligation under a warranty to come back in. They took 5 months to hire a new general contractor. So yes, we were attempting to correct the situation. They were their own general contractor for 5 months.
But before, you're saying that before Laboon went bankrupt, you did not continue to provide services even though you had not been paid?
Right. We were done with our work before they went bankrupt. We had already finished our work. The TBMs were in place. We submitted our invoices. They were waiting for payment. The city was should have paid LeMand. They were going to. Then they withheld the $20,000, and real quickly after that, they went bankrupt, and the city dismissed them from the job.
And then you came back in?
We came back in. They said, will you please help us try to find out what the leaks are caused by? And we did that for another 3 or 4 or 5 months. And then,
is that what your quantum merit claim?
That was my quantum merit, is that the city looked to us for payment. I mean, the city knew that we were looking for them to pay that. And that was our quantum merit.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ken. The court will take another brief recess, and we'll be back for the concluding clause.
The audience will please rise.